Chapter 3. Research Objectives and Procedures. The purpose of the research was to find out and report in detail how some Waldorf Elementary-level teachers were making assessments. These would be revelatory case studies, which could be a basis for drawing inferences about Waldorf methods in general. Charles and Mertler, 2002, A, pages 277 to 279. Pain and Pain, 2004, pages 31 to 35. We could have assumed that our selected teachers were conducting classroom assessments according to prescribed Waldorf pedagogy. They were all experienced Waldorf class teachers. But the main objective of the research was to provide controlled documentation, a systematic, straightforward, evidence-based account of when, where, how, and why these teachers assessed their student progress. Evidence-based here means the description would be based on a record of real teachers teaching in real time in actual classrooms. We would, as accurately as possible, depict the process, their process, of setting learning goals and measuring students' progress toward those goals. We would treat their account of this process as evidence for what, when, how, and why. An additional objective was to provide discussion of evidence of another kind, evidence for the validity, reliability, and fairness of those assessments. In Waldorf education, questions about the validity of teachers' classroom assessments can be taken up only in the context of Waldorf teacher professionalism, including teacher training and systems for teacher evaluation. Also important in this regard is the status of Waldorf schools as accredited, independent, faculty-run schools. Under the heading of Accountability in Waldorf Education, we report our findings on these questions in Part 3. To meet the first objective, we formulated these two research questions. 1. How do selected Waldorf elementary-level teachers set learning goals and plan teaching in relation to these goals? And 2. How do they conduct classroom assessments of student progress toward those goals? Because assessment is always of something, gathering answers to 1 would be critical to understanding data gathered for answering 2. In reporting and interpreting our data on the Waldorf understanding and practice of goal setting and assessment, we use assessment terminology and definitions provided by Erasions, 2005, textbook for teachers on classroom assessment. We did not at first supply our participating teachers with this terminology. For example, formal versus informal assessments, preliminary versus instructional assessments, formative versus summative uses of assessment. Because we wanted to discover without influencing their understanding of the practice and purpose of assessment. Our teachers, in fact, told us in later interviews when we asked them explicitly about formative and summative uses of assessment that these terms are not part of the Waldorf vocabulary. Though they thought that many, if not most, of their assessments made while teaching would fit the definition of formative assessment that we supplied. Because comparison with mainstream approaches would help promote understanding of Waldorf methods, another purpose was to position Waldorf methods in relation to assessment methods taken as standard in the education profession. We aimed, then, to discuss whether, and to what extent, and why Waldorf classroom assessments are different. The extensive scholarly literature on alternatives to standardized testing methods of assessment is particularly relevant here. We found some comparisons very much to the point, for example, the backward design approach to lesson planning, for example, Wiggins and McTighe, 2005, books and articles on assessment for rather than of learning, for example, Black and others, 2004, the theory of multiple intelligences, Gardner, 1993, and research on the relationship between art and cognition, for example, Eisner, 2002. With these reflections as touchstones, we discuss in Chapter 7 to what extent Waldorf methods are in agreement with scholars' recommendations for effective assessments and better learning outcomes. Qualitative social research in education. The Waldorf class teacher as focus. To carry out our set of case studies, we worked in the tradition of qualitative social research in education, using, for the most part, the inductive techniques and procedures described by Strauss and Corbin, 1998, in order to ascertain the meanings that Waldorf teachers ascribe to their activities, Pain and Pain, 2004, pages 175 to 180. We are aligned in particular with the constructivist stream of grounded theory for the gathering of rich data. Data that incorporate participants' assumptions, analysis by coding, explained below, and interpretive presentation of findings, Bogdan and Bicklin, 1998, 2010, Sharma's 2006, 2010. We aimed, however, not at grounded theory, but at an accurate, credible description. Sharma's 2006, page 132, points out that grounded theory's legitimate task is not to provide verified knowledge, but to offer plausible accounts. The researchers believe this is such an account. The simplest way to find out how Waldorf teachers set learning goals and make assessments was to ask them. We knew at the outset that in Waldorf pedagogy, teaching, learning, and assessment are united and simultaneous, that Waldorf teachers are usually assessing continuously as they teach and do not consider assessment as a separate or later part of their job. To ask them to separate their teaching from their assessing was immediately to give a shape to their answers that might distort the picture of what actually takes place in the dynamic social matrix of the Waldorf classroom. However, our research objectives imposed this distinction. We devised a three-part journal questionnaire, described below, based on a three-part conceptual framework: planning, delivery of instruction, assessment of results, generally understood to be three distinct parts of the activity of teaching. Erasian, 2005, page 53. We collected data this way, but in interpreting it, we found that a two-part framework, one, planning, and two, delivery while assessing, better describe the teaching that we documented. Thus, the two-chapter presentation of the data, chapters 4 and 5. Participants, 9 Waldorf class teachers. We presented the project to faculty at 3 different Waldorf elementary schools in the spring of 2009. 9 class teachers of grades 3 through 7 agreed to participate for the first half of the coming academic year, September 2010 through January 2011. 2 teaching grades 3, 4, 5, and 7, and 1 teaching grade 6. 2 were from the Whittington Waldorf School, 3 from the Seaside Waldorf School, and 4 from Cheshire Waldorf School. Our project sponsor provided the teachers with a small stipend to compensate them for their time, but they all agreed to help mainly because they wanted to support the project. 3 different schools gave a cross-section. While all Waldorf elementary schools share a common approach, and all Waldorf schools are faculty-run schools, each school is independent administratively and fiscally, and each is embedded in a local community, adjusting to the needs, standards, and expectations of that community. Data collection instrument, the teacher's journal. We asked teachers to keep a journal, that is, answer the journal questions for each main lesson block taught during the 5 months of the study. We chose to limit data collection to the teaching of main lessons because they are the principal instructional unit in the Waldorf curriculum. Teachers teach main lesson subjects during the first part of the morning. Each subject lasts from 2 to 4, or in some cases 5 weeks. Main lesson subjects are the core subjects: history, math, language arts, science, cultural studies, and geography. Moreover, students' main lesson books, portfolio-like compilations of their work for the block, serve as one important basis for teachers' assessments of learning. The heading for the first part of the teacher's journal was preparation. It was divided into 3 parts. First, they were asked to state their learning goals for the block, finishing the statement, "At block's end, students should know, be able to, have acquired." Next, they were asked to list the sources used for planning instruction. And last, they were to describe the daily activities planned for enabling children to meet the goals stated. The heading of the second part of the teacher's journal was daily journal. They were asked for as much detail as they could manage, 2 hours per week for journal writing, and phone conversations was the most we expected, about what actually took place in the classroom each day during main lesson. The heading of the third part of the teacher's journal was after the block, where they were asked to evaluate individual and class progress toward each goal stated in preparation. explain how they knew, describe how they tracked their assessments, and say with whom and when they shared these assessments. In the majority of cases, our teachers answered these questions orally as part of a weekly focused telephone conversation that we had scheduled in order to ask for clarification and elaboration of journal entries. Apart from the journal questions, we asked also about the school's procedures and policies for formal written reports. We gathered journal data for all main lesson blocks taught by participating teachers for 5 months, from September 2010 through January 2011. One teacher taught 6, the other taught 5 main lesson blocks in that interval. Weekly phone conversations were as important as journal entries. In order to arrange and categorize the written data, we asked teachers, what does this mean? What accounts for this? Why are you doing this? And similar questions aimed at eliciting their thinking processes. We tabulated and reflected on written and oral answers in order to discover the most prominent characteristics and emphases. This process, called coding, is identifying the ideas, themes, concept, and key processes in the data. Pain and Pain, 2004, pages 36 through 41. Strauss and Corbin, 1998, page 3. Sharmaz, 2006, pages 42 to 71. Some examples of our codes were teacher being concerned about child self-esteem, teacher imparting content by telling a story, using peer assessment, being concerned with social interactions, asking questions to elicit new solutions, planning exercises to improve concentration. From these codes, we chose the most frequently occurring for the headings in the presentation of data. Midway in the data collection, we reached saturation. We were not hearing from teachers any new ways of expressing their goals and expectations or describing their instructional assessments. They had mentioned and restated that all salient themes or aspects of their activities, Strauss and Corbin, 1998, pages 136 and 158. We separated out some of these constants for inclusion in our discussion of Waldorf fundamentals in Chapter 2. These we recognize as basic principles and methods for all Waldorf class teachers. They were critical for understanding how and why our case study teachers planned, delivered, and assessed the results of their teaching. In summary, the body of data collected to meet the first objective comprised A, the three-part written journal responses, B, notes from focused conversations, usually weekly, elaborating the journals, C, analysis by coding of the most frequent and apparently most determinative processes as they emerged, D, researchers' reflections informed by our prior knowledge and professional experiences, E, teachers' faculty-approved block plans, E, examples of formal assessments, block reports, mid-year reports, end-of-the-year narrative reports. F, background questionnaires filled out by teachers with profiles of their classes. G, statistical and policy questionnaires filled out by the participating schools. Although we visited the classrooms of participating teachers and observed some main lessons, classroom observation was not part of the method. We wanted to discover their intentions, insights, reflections, motivation, creativity, all inner processes which shape their teaching and evaluation of their own effectiveness as reflected in the assessments of student attainment. Our aim in this part of the study was not to judge the teaching, but to find out how they went about it, not to judge the accuracy of their assessments, but to find out how they conducted those assessments. To restate, our objective of the study was teachers' accounts of their intentions, their teaching, and their evaluation of how well they succeeded. Our observing of them teaching would not have served the purpose and might have hindered it, since the presence of observers can disrupt both teacher and students from their normal level of intention. Are the findings representative? This set of case studies cannot be used as a basis for claiming that the methods of our 9 participating teachers are representative of Waldorf class teachers generally. Certainly, there is some variability in the universe of Waldorf class teachers. That group would be composed of teachers of grades 3 through 7, the grades in the study, teaching in schools with full membership status in OSNA, a total of 410 teachers. Ours is a relatively small sample. However, there are considerations that make it reasonable to generalize. Strauss and Corbin's distinction between broad, macro, and narrow, micro, conditions that account for a situation under study is helpful in this regard. 1998, pages 181 to 199. Waldorf fundamentals, like the age-appropriate curriculum and the teaching rhythms, are broad conditions determining how all Waldorf teachers teach. Unless these conditions are present, a school will not have been recognized by OSNA as a Waldorf school. The professional education of teachers and continuing teacher evaluation that we describe in chapters 8 and 9 are other common broad conditions determining how they teach. In other words, the founding principles, teacher training, teacher standards, and, as we the researchers know from personal experience, a tradition of extensive collegial network in the Waldorf movement, all help ensure common standards and methods. Narrow conditions, however, would account for many variations. The life experience of the individual teacher, students in the class, the subject being taught, and whether the school is new or well-established, for example. Except for micro-variations attributable to different subject matter and students' ages, our results, the main features, themes, and emphases in goal setting and assessing that we identified, were consistent over the 9 case studies and corresponded to macro Waldorf professional guidelines. Thus, we state with some confidence that if an experienced Waldorf class teacher trained in an OSNA member teacher education program is teaching in an OSNA member elementary school, the probability that his methods for evaluating students' progress are similar to those we documented in this study is very high. It is important to restate that we focus on grades 3 through 7. If it is reasonable to make generalizations based on our 9 case studies, then those generalizations apply only to those grades. Because of significant differences in the planning and delivery of instruction in Waldorf early childhood programs and the 2 earliest grades, it is inappropriate to extend our results to those grades. We strongly recommend separate research focused on Waldorf age-appropriate methods in early childhood programs, kindergarten and grades 1 and 2, and another separate project for Waldorf high schools. In the constructivist approach in qualitative social research, 2 kinds of transparency are important. The first concerns what is sometimes called reflexivity. How much do the researcher's questionings, the research instrument, and the research itself as a shared undertaking influence and even determine the data, in this case, subject's responses? Pain and Pain, 2004, pages 191 through 195. Reflexivity is permissible and indeed contributes to understanding provided it is made explicit. Our explicit focus on assessment in the journals and in all of our questioning inevitably shaped the way teachers responded. Our explicit focus on assessments in the journals and in all of our questioning inevitably shaped the way teachers responded, but did not, as they told us, influence the way they taught. We had urged the teachers, both in our orientation sessions and later, not to change what they ordinarily did in the classroom. And we had alerted them to the possible influence of the journal's terminology. As will be shown, Waldorf elementary level teachers, especially those teaching lower grades, do not usually or readily view instruction and assessment as 2 different processes. Despite our assessment-focused questions, they tended to resist this distinction. Nor were they concerned with terminological distinctions that we sometimes used. For example, the difference between a goal and an objective, or between a formative and summative answer. We concluded that their participation in the study did not substantially change what teachers would have done anyway, for 3 reasons. First, in regard to lesson planning, all 3 schools required teachers to submit written main lesson block plans at the beginning of the year. Thus, they had already articulated their teaching goals for each block, and most drew on those plans in answering the questions in the journal about their preparation. Moreover, they often gave their own formulations of goals in preference to completing the wording on the journal. Second, we asked them in later questionnaires if participation had in any way affected their teaching. The only effect reported, and only by 3 of the 9, was that participation made them more aware of how they tracked student progress. No one thought it changed how he or she planned or taught. Third, the documented practices in no instance deviated from what would be expected for experienced Waldorf teachers. Our awareness of certain trends in the scholarly literature on alternative methods of assessment did to some degree influence how we coded the data. However, the sources that ultimately proved most relevant for aligning Waldorf methods with scholarly recommendations, namely those advocating backward design, understanding by design, and learning-centered assessment, had little influence on our interpretation. We can say this because we consulted this literature only after completing the coding of the main themes. The second transparency issue concerns bias. We think that our long-standing personal and professional connections with Waldorf education were an asset rather than a liability in this regard. Our prior knowledge of Waldorf pedagogy gave us contextual understanding. Charles and Mertler, 2002, B, page 238. Waldorf teachers function within a culture or a context composed of assumptions about the nature of the human being, child development, the proper goals of education, and what makes for excellence in teaching, a context that they do not necessarily speak about every day. As trained, experienced Waldorf teachers, they drew from this context continually. If we, as researchers, had not been familiar with this culture or context, we would have needed time-consuming research into the philosophic, psychological, sociological underpinnings of Waldorf pedagogy in order to make a fair and valid interpretation of the meanings of participating teachers' words. In other words, our prior knowledge, rather than being a source of bias, contributes to the credibility of the account that we present. Maxwell, 2010, defines validity as correctness or credibility of a description, conclusion, explanation, interpretation, or other sort of account, page 280. We collected data, teachers' responses, in a way intended to maximize objectivity and validity in the findings and to ensure accuracy and amplitude. We collected both written and oral responses, we sought respondent validation, and we each worked separately with all 9 teachers over several months of involvement. Maxwell, 2010, page 283. The validity of teachers' assessments is a different question, which we address in Part 3. Transparency is also important in regard to whose interests are served by the research. The fiscal sponsor, the Association of Waldorf Schools of North America, ASNA, was concerned that independent Waldorf education become better known and understood. Its motive for sponsorship was stated in the grant proposal seeking project funding: to provide an exact, systematic, evidence-based description of goal setting and assessment that will enable us to participate in the current dialogue in mainstream education on these critical topics. Apart from that directive, ASNA at no time attempted to influence either the conduct or the written account of the Part 2 research. That organization did directly influence the research and writing of Part 3, however, out of a legitimate concern for accuracy. Legitimate because its policies are part of the discussion. Other published Waldorf literature. This book joins the large body of published work on Waldorf education, which we refer to above, written by educators and others writing from both within and outside of the Waldorf movement. Many publications cover the history, philosophy, and theory of Waldorf education. A number of books and articles aimed at prospective and current Waldorf parents describe ideal Waldorf pedagogical practice and outcomes. We can safely say that the methods for setting goals and assessing student progress that we discuss here are already familiar to Waldorf educations and the thousands of students, families, communities, and accreditation personnel who have experienced Waldorf teaching firsthand. A case in point is the article mentioned above from the Research Institute for Waldorf Education, Mitchell and others, 2008, which provides an overview of Waldorf teachers' assessment methods as prescribed by Waldorf pedagogy. In most details, our documentation of actual Waldorf teachers' assessment strategies accords with the ideal picture presented in this article. Our work differs from that and other accounts by Waldorf educators with respect to our research objectives and inductive procedures described above. We address readers who are unfamiliar with Waldorf methods, whereas much of the existing Waldorf literature is aimed at prospective or practicing Waldorf teachers or families considering choosing Waldorf education for their children. Most of it is either prescriptive for Waldorf teachers or descriptive of the ideal, providing overviews of the theory and practice of Waldorf education. Today's standards for evidence require documentation. The research reported here is a systematic account of how and why 9 teachers in 3 different Waldorf elementary schools actually went about setting goals, how they carried out their teaching plans, and to what extent and how they ascertained that learning took place.